I'm Celeste Headlee. This is On Second Thought. In 1981, Sam Raimi made a surprise hit horror movie on a $90,000 budget. His star was Bruce Campbell, playing a college kid named Ash Williams, who ends up fighting scores of the undead. Stephen King loved it, so did millions more. And The Evil Dead spawned two sequels, video games, Marvel comic books, a musical, and now a television series. Ash vs. The Evil Dead. Campbell is in Atlanta this weekend for Walker Stalker Con, and he has a new autobiography out. It's called Hail to the Chin, Further Confessions of a B-Movie Actor. He talked to Adam Ragusa.
Bruce Campbell, thanks for being here.
Well, thanks for having me.
I'm sure that being the archetypal B-movie celebrity, you're quite familiar with the ritual of having to acquaint a mass audience to who you are, even though you're very famous within your circle. So let's go ahead and start at the beginning. Here's a clip from 1981, Bruce Campbell in his defining role as Ash Williams in the film The Evil Dead. Here's a clip.
I'm all right now, Ashley. Come on, Dr. Chang, let me out. I'm all right now. It's your sister, Cheryl.
You bastards. Why are you torturing me like this? Why?
Nice. Awesome.
So this
Man,
is the
my
the
finest
classic,
work.
Your finest work. Well, just the beginning of a whole career of fine work.
You know
work.
What's awesome, though, is to be best known for something when you had your least experience. That's when you know you've killed it. So therefore, bringing Ash back into Ash versus Evil Dead, like we're doing now on Stars, it's my chance to fix Ash, be like George Lucas. I'm going to go in and I'm going to fix Ash, because it's been 25 years since I played the idiot last. So I want to bring actual experience to playing him now. So I'm fixing Ash currently. He's almost fixed.
And that worked so well for George Lucas.
Oh boy, did it.
So this is to let people know who might have never heard of this. Evil Dead was this sort of B-movie, crazy, off-the-wall, just crazy-pants horror film that you made with your high school buddy, Sam Raimi, who's since gone on to be a big-time director, directed all the Spider-Man films of the 2000s. And you guys were buddies from high school outside of Detroit. As you look back at those films, Bruce, I wonder, what do you think their appeal was? I think the context in 1981 was very different. Now, 2017, there's all kinds of weird culture everywhere. Back in 1981, there was kind of this mass monoculture that was so dominant, and everything about Evil Dead screamed, we're not part of that. Is that what people liked about these movies?
Yeah, I guess so. Maybe it's just, well, it's blue-collar entertainment, really. Evil Dead actually, you know, viewed in drive-ins when it first came out. So it was a drive-in movie. It was known as a drive-in movie. Yeah. And we actually felt obliged to make it a good drive-in movie, because we would study the movies that were out, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Revenge of the Cheerleaders. And if there was a part in these movies that was lousy, the actual viewers would turn their car headlights on and honk their horn until it stopped being lousy. And we went, oh my God, this is our audience right here. These are instant critics. So we thought, okay, if we're going to do a horror movie, it can't ever stop. Once the horror starts, it can't stop. So I credit these lousy drive-ins with really teaching us a discipline. If you're going to go for it, go for it. Don't waste their time.
But what about the sort of... it's not just that it's horror. It's not just that there's violence that interests people. It's that it's hokey. It's intentionally hokey. What did that hokiness mean? What did it signify?
Well, now, bear in mind the evolution of the Evil Dead movies. The first Evil Dead really is what I call kind of a failed melodrama.
Okay.
There wasn't a lot of winking at the camera. It was inexperienced actors mostly saying crappy dialogue. And then when the horror starts, it's really over the top, because Sam Raimi's a very in-your-face, over-the-top guy. And so crazy ways that monsters were hurting us, you know, I think that sort of put it over the top as well. But then Evil Dead 2 morphed more into what I call splatstick. It was horror and a little more knowing comedy. We also had a little more experience under our belt. And then by Army of Darkness, that really is just like a Ray Harryhausen with, you know, with jokes being cracked. It's like Bob Hope going back to 1300. So, you know, it was a weird evolution of these movies, but it never really started as any one thing. The first Evil Dead is actually meant to be serious, believe it or not. I know it sounds weird.
Yeah, I suppose that never occurred to me. But as you mentioned, Ash is back. Here's a scene from the Starz TV series Ash vs. Evil Dead, spinoff from the original film franchise. In this scene, Ash is contemplating letting some three strangers stay with him. Let's listen.
Maybe we could just camp in the front yard.
Can you give us a second? Okay, look, there is no way in hell they're going to stay here because they're going to get possessed. Then they're going to be on the night train to Philadelphia.
With stops in Oklahoma City and Miami.
Nice.
At this point, Bruce, I feel like you're winking at the winking. It's gone three levels of meta.
Well, no, we take it very seriously. Watch the show. You'll see. We are in it to win it. But these are what I like about the current incarnation. It's a guy who is well past his prime. You know, he's a middle-aged, out-of-shape guy who's lazy and has horrible bad habits. And now he's got to save the world. That's the guy that I want to play. I don't want to play the perfect guy in tights. This is actually a great, great... It's become, in my opinion, yeah, put Ash in my tombstone now. Now I'm ready for it. Because I feel like... I finally have serviced the character in a way that we want to, because he is the everyman, which is why he appeals to, you know, a small but fervent audience, that they go, that's me. Every garage mechanic has more skills than Ash Williams. He has no training in the military. We got a note from Starz one time. Oh, Ash is mishandling the gun as he sweeps it across somebody else's face. We're like, what are you talking about? Ash doesn't know anything. He doesn't know any of this. So there is no mishandling. He never got trained. So, you know, and Ash pushes the shotgun like Jimmy Cagney in the old movies. When he shoots, he lurches it forward like that'll give him extra power, you know. And he's an old school guy. Drives a beat up 73, you know, Chevy Delta 88, and you know, chainsaws and shotguns and fists and, you know, lower back pain. That's what he's all about.
Obviously, some autobiographical elements in there.
Oh, sure.
You've got a new book. It's an update to your first autobiography that came out in the early 2000s. The new book is called Hail to the Chin, Further Confessions of a B-Movie Actor. And it's sort of about what's been going on in your career since your first book. That first book, however, is what this new book begins with, because it begins with a foreword by the gentleman who was your literary agent on that first autobiography. And his name is?
Mr. John Hodgman. And he was actually the assistant of the literary agent. He wasn't officially a literary agent even then. He was a guy who answered her phone.
But he was a guy who recognized, and at least he writes about it in the foreword to your new book, that I think he writes that he realized at that moment the nerd culture was going to become the mass culture. And
well,
he was right,
he was
apparently.
Prophetic. I think so, too. And also, I might say this. I've been vindicated. I've supported B-movies for a long time, which doesn't mean bad. Just means the budgets are usually lower. All the A-movies now are B-movies.
What do you mean by that?
If you dress up like a bat and fly around a city called Gotham in a souped-up car, let me tell you, that's a B-movie. If you are bitten by a radioactive spider, that is not only a B-movie, that is a 1950s B-movie. Iron Man, all these yahoos, everybody with a cape who comes from another planet, those are all B-movie ideas. So thank you, world. You're welcome, Hollywood.
So why did that happen? Why do you think that nerd culture or B-moviness, whatever it is, why do you think that that's now the mass culture? What happened?
Everything goes now. I think people just want what they want. They want a little more fantasy, horror, sci-fi. You know, horror was one rung above porno. If you did a horror movie, you were kind of, that's how you were definitely starting out, or your career was ending there. You know, you start in horror, you end in horror.
And often the genres mingled.
Yeah, now because of shows like Walking Dead, the immense popularity of that, horror is just another genre now. And obviously still very popular. It, the new Stephen King thing, just made, you know, $100 billion in its opening weekend. So it's not a dead genre. It used to be a genre that it was a staple. You could make a certain amount of them a year. People always would go to them. But now sci-fi, fantasy has just gone completely crazy. But what it's done is it got rid of the middle class in Hollywood, because all these movies now are $200 million.
Yeah.
The only thing that's left are basically $2 million movies. So that's what you got.
You say that Hollywood has lost its middle class of films. There's only movies made with ginormous $400 million budgets or teeny tiny little budgets. I'm wondering if maybe TV has become the new middle class, and you've continued to do TV.
Yes,
Let's actually listen to a little
right.
clip of you on Burn Notice. You play a character, Sam Axe, on Burn Notice, great USA series. That series actually included a standalone television film that centered on your character. Let's listen to a scene from that.
You stay here, you die. You come with me.
We live?
Well, the odds are a little better. So look, let's do this. Get the patients outside, load them in the trucks, and let me know if you see any bad guys.
I can't believe you're doing this.
What about me?
You and me are going to build a bomb.
So Burn Notice, prestige TV or slightly sub-prestige TV, that's the new middle class of Hollywood?
Well, it's also, it's B television. Yeah. So it fit in perfect. Bad guys, sure, yeah. Briefcases, sunglasses, pretty women, crap blowing up. That's a total B-movie show. You know, so and it was on cable. It was perfect. So that was a great place to be for 7 years. That was really a blast to work on, because I didn't have to carry the show. I was Mr. Salt and Pepper, you know?
Yeah. This kind of stuff, B-movie stuff, horror, fantasy, is this what you like, Bruce Campbell, or is it just, are you just blooming where you were planted?
Yeah, well, you fight with the army you got. Yeah, I think it's a little bit of that. I didn't read Spider-Man comics. Sam Raimi actually did. I read Sad Sack. It was about some loser guy in the army. I was more of an Archie comics kind of guy. I never really played the Silver Surfer, Wolverine, any of that stuff. Didn't really play that game. And horror we really got into because it was one of the staples. You could use nobodies. You could have low-budget cars and locations. You didn't need anything fancy. We had done mostly comedies in all of our little amateur movies, but we thought, what, we'd have to get Steve Martin or somebody. It would be too expensive. So, you know, if you think about it, the early classic low-budget horror movies had nobody in them. Nobody, mm-hmm. Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Halloween was Jamie Lee Curtis, but nobody knew who she was. So it was a great way to break in. And then we've since sort of try to retroactively shove our humor into stuff. So I'm always attracted to things that are a little more pronounced, like Hercules and Xena. My representatives never knew why I was going down there to work on those silly cable syndicated shows. I'm like, because we have a great time and we can get away with murder on that show. This is, I'm an actor, shut up, this is what I do. You know, so I seek roles and stories that I think are a little loopier, a little more not mainstream in a way. So I'm at kinship with the sci-fi fantasy horror folks, only in that I don't really like mainstream stuff as much.
Yeah. And it's made you a beloved figure, and you've had a phenomenal career as sort of a cult figure. A lot of the work, or not, I suppose, well, I suppose it is work. A lot of the attention you get is going to conventions, and that's been going back years. John Hodgman writes in the foreword to your book that one of the ways he was able to get attention from a publisher was by showing them a video of you showing up at a con and kids going crazy for you. Like, proof. Look, it's not mainstream, but there's lots of people out here that want this stuff. And in fact, the reason you're coming to Atlanta is to go to a con, Walker Stalker Con.
Walker Stalker. It should be huge, by the way. So watch out.
Cons used to be necessary because people had no other access to the people who were into this kind of stuff had no other access to each other, right? Now, with the internet.
Oh, it was twofold. Twofold in that, you know, when I was a kid, there was no way to see Shatner anywhere.
Yeah.
Now the guy's in 52 cities a year. You know, he's amazing. But that has all changed. Now, and then convention started with guys who were from TV shows that were 30 years old. Now there are a much better blend of shows that are actually on the air right now, like Norman Reedus from Walking Dead, guys like that. and Michael Rooker from, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy, all the way back to Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer. That's when he first came to the cons, because they knew him as that guy. Yeah. Now he's even more popular than before because of, you know, he got in a mainstream movie. So it's great. The green rooms of these conventions are awesome. You know, Elvira making green tea, Stan Lee's napping in the corner, Shatner's tweeting his brains out. You know, it's really a fun, and I love meeting these people too. It's just, I get to approach them now. That's the one difference. It's like, shut up. It's a green room. It's like Switzerland.
That's right. Everybody has to behave themselves in the green room.
Well, you also have to be accessible. Yeah. Someone comes up, goes, hi, Mr. Chatter, Bruce Campbell, how are you? He can't say, you know, screw you, like he, you know, normally.
He's kind of infamous for doing that, even in professional situations.
He's great. No, he's, you know what you do? Is I come up, I kiss his ring, say good morning, Bill, you're looking great, and then I'd never bother him again, and he loves that. He
gotcha.
His conversations are short and sweet. And I didn't hit him with Star Trek when I first met him. Mm. I went T.J. Hooker, and it caught him by surprise. And I actually knew T.J. Hooker, and I commented on how he would do these power slides up to the crime scene. And the camera would keep rolling without a cut, and Shatner would get out. So it was him who did that. Mm-hmm. And I mentioned that to him, and he got this startled look on his face of like, nobody's ever mentioned that to me before. So if you meet one of your people that you're dying to meet, you wait 2 hours in line, don't hit him with the obvious. Go throw him a curve.
That's actor Bruce Campbell speaking with Adam Ragusa. Campbell's best known for his role as Ash Williams in the Evil Dead franchise. He has written a memoir now called Hail to the Chin, Further Confessions of a B-Movie Actor. And he's in Atlanta this weekend for Walker Stalker Con. You can get details at gpbnews.org. That's our show for today, but we'd love to hear from you. What are the top three horror movies of all time? For you, anyway. Psycho, maybe Jaws, Poltergeist. If you had to pick only three, which would they be? You can leave us a message at 404-500-9457 or find us on social media. For today, that's On Second Thought from GPB News. I'm Celeste Headlee. Have a great day.